I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. This past Memorial Day weekend was a test for the TSA that's come under fire for long lines at security checkpoints at some of the country's busiest airports. An even bigger test is this summer when an estimated 230 million people are expected to fly U.S. airlines. In fact, more people are flying, which is putting stresses on the agency and raising questions about its funding and its management. The TSA administrator was on the hot seat testifying before a congressional committee recently about problems at the agency. But Congress bears some of the blame for the congestion for using some of the TSA funding to pay down the federal debt. We asked Ron Nixon to talk us through, or perhaps walk us through, all of this, and he is Washington correspondent for the New York Times, covering Homeland Security and joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. And Ron Nixon, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So how did the TSA do this past weekend?
Well, they seem to have done pretty good. There were reports that people were getting through the lines fairly well, and this seems to be a result of TSA moving resources from some of the smaller airports to some of the larger ones to make the lines go a little bit faster. They've also increased overtime. They've promoted some people from part-time to full-time. They've increased the number of passenger screening dogs that they use, removing them from some of the smaller airports like Richmond, Virginia, to some of the larger airports where they can help screen people through the line. So those things seem to have worked this weekend. But as you said in your introduction, there will be much more travel over the summer. So
230 million people. I mean, that's a lot of people using
U.S.
airlines.
That's a lot of people, yes.
Well, we heard about the problems at Chicago. I'm curious specifically, were things better at Chicago? I was actually going in and out of the Newark, New Jersey airport, and things were pretty smooth, I have to say.
Yeah, from the reports that we got, and things were pretty smooth at Chicago as well. That was one of the problem airports. JFK, New York, is one of the problem airports. So, again, they've thrown a number of resources at those larger airports, and things seem to have gone fairly smoothly this weekend.
Why has there been, or perhaps over the last year or so, a reduced number of TSA screeners? Help us understand how that happened, because it's clear that more people are flying, but why the reduction of screeners?
So this is a long and complicated problem that started, some time ago. And there are a number of factors that resulted in them losing screeners. It's a number of people, including the union that represents the screeners, have said part of it was budget. As you know, with sequestration, all of the agencies endured budget cuts. So that was one of the problems. The other problem, though, was that TSA came up with this expedited screening program called PreCheck.
Right.
And this was, people would pay $85. They would sign up. You'd be fingerprinted. You'd get a background check run on you, so they know who you are coming into the airport. So this way, they can just speed you through the lines. You don't have to take off your shoes. Don't have to take your computer out of your bag. Don't have to take your coats off. And they can just focus then on the people that they don't know, the people who hadn't signed up for this. That works fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
The issue there was that they thought more people would sign up for PreCheck than actually signed up. So they started to reduce on their own the number of screeners. And you see that in some of their budget documents where they list this as a savings. They, for instance, in the 2016 budget documents, they cut the screener workforce by nearly 1,700 people.
Wow.
And about $100 million. And so that was one of the issues that, I talked to the Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security, and he specifically pointed to that as one of the issues. The bigger issue there—
Let me ask just one thing.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm curious about why more people did not sign up for PreCheck. As you said, it's an $85 fee. I think you can do some of it online, but you do have to go maybe to an airport or someplace to be approved. Why do you think that didn't meet expectations?
I think part of it is marketing, that they didn't market it very well, and a lot of people simply didn't know about it, so they didn't sign up for it. The other thing I think is that, you know, it when it has been marketed, it has been marketed more as something for business travelers. And so those people, or people got the impression that it's for business passengers. And so, you know, if I fly one or two times a year, you know, is it really, that's the thinking, if I fly one or two times a year, is that really worth me paying $85 to sign up for this thing? And, you know, about a year or so ago, I was talking to some people who had pre-checked, or I asked if they were signing up. And some people just had, you know, philosophical problems with signing up for something that they feel like, well, I should be doing this anyway. So why am I paying money for you to do this? And then there are others who don't want the government to have any more information on them than they already have. So all of these things were a factor in why people haven't signed up for PreCheck.
Let me ask you about some of the problems, though, at TSA. One is he I believe is now on leave, perhaps paid leave. A guy named Kelly, is it Hogan or Hagen?
Hogan,
right. Assistant mm-hmm. Administrator for the Office of Security Operations. While all this has been going on, was able to get something like a $90,000 raise or pay increase or perhaps bonus. What is this about?
Well, this is something that came up during the congressional hearings and something that several people inside the agency had been complaining about for a while, that, you know, Mr. Hogan, who had the Office of Security Operations, had gotten about $90,000 in bonuses over a 13-month period.
Right.
And that's unclear what exactly the bonuses were for.
It was about $10,000 a month, right?
Yeah, $10,000 a month is something that the Inspector General calls smurfing, that was done in such a way to obscure the fact that it would eventually add up to about $90,000. Right. And so you can imagine if TSA has historically, since it's been created, had low morale and high attrition rates. And it doesn't help that, you know, people who are screeners, most of them probably don't make $90,000 a year. Right, exactly. So you see a person getting $90,000 in bonuses when you don't even make that much. And at the same time, as you may recall, there was an audit done by the Office of Inspector General where they managed to sneak fake bombs and fake weapons through the screening at various airports about 95% of the time. About 67 of the 70 tests that they ran, they managed to get these fake bombs and fake weapons through. And so the person who's in charge of all that is getting bonuses at the same time that they're failing these tests.
There were also some whistleblowers that were trying to shed some light on some of the problems that they believed were happening at TSA. What happened to the whistleblowers?
Well, a lot of them are still there. Some people have left the agency, but a lot of them are still there. And they, to a large extent, have been the reason that most of this stuff has come out. As you may recall, a few weeks ago, three of them testified at a congressional hearing laying out the problems at the TSA. They have been sending information to the media, of course, and of course, to congressional investigators who have held a number of hearings about the problems at TSA. And a large part of those problems stem from things like what they call directed reassignments. That is, if a supervisor at an airport doesn't like someone at that particular, one of the people who works for him or her, they just reassign them or put them in for a reassignment to another place. And so the whistleblowers were saying this was being done in a way that retaliated against them for bringing up things like that people were going through the pre-check line that hadn't been approved for pre-check, or that, you know, people were supposed to be doing certain things and they didn't do it. And so when the whistleblowers would bring these things to light, they would then be threatened with, well, we're going to reassign you to someplace else.
Is there some kind of resolution? I mean, there is a fair amount of finger pointing going on. Administrators saying, you know, to Congress, you're not funding us fully. I read from the, I guess it was the union, the TSA union, saying, you know, passengers have to get their acts together. And I think anyone that's gone through a security line, you do have to scratch your head sometimes about people trying to get these, you know, gigantic suitcases through.
Right.
And you know, it's just going to slow everything down. And certainly Congress putting the blame on TSA. Are we sort of at the finger-pointing stage, or is there going to be some kind of resolution?
That's hard to say. I think that, you know, the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mr. Jay Johnson, has, you know, instructed the TSA to take a number of steps to try and resolve the issues with the long lines. But again, now, those are, you know, short-term things that they are doing to alleviate the problems now. But long term, you know, as people like, you know, Congressman Benny Thompson from Mississippi and others have said, there needs to be some structural fixes at the agency as well. And I think that Peter Neffinger, the new administrator at the TSA, has taken a number of steps to try and do that. You know, he is retraining the workforce. They've set up their own training academy. You know, he stopped those director reassignments. He has put a cap on those bonuses that you can get, mm-hmm. and trying to motivate the workforce so that they don't constantly rank low in terms of morale. So there are some changes that are happening, but there are some other things that also need to happen as well. Like, obviously, they need more people.
They need more people. I'm curious, what does a TSA, one of those people that you see as you go through the airport, what do they typically get paid? Are these full-time jobs? Do they have benefits?
Some are full-time. I think a large number of them are also part-time. And so that's one of the things that they're trying to do now, convert some of those part-time people to full-time. You know, I'm told that most of them make somewhere less than $15 an hour. Mm. And it's, you know, I think that one of the things that that people TSA gets ranked up there with the IRS, you know, in terms of hated agencies a lot of times. And as you mentioned before, a lot of times you do see people, and I've done it myself. You go through the lines and, you know, somebody's telling you to take everything out of your pocket, and you kind of roll your eyes at them.
Right.
But then you've got something in your pocket. I mean, so, you know, you've got to go back through the line but it's you. You've done that. But you take it out on, you know, the people at the, you know, the screeners who have an important job. I mean, their job is to stop a bomb or a weapon from getting on that plane. But at the same time, nobody says to them, hey, thanks for your service. You know, we look at them as glorified security guards.
Well, Ron, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Ron Nixon. He's Washington correspondent for The New York Times covering Homeland Security. And we're talking about the TSA and air travel. The TSA falls under the Department of Homeland Security. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Talking about some of the congestion, how to ease some of the congestion at airports. A little bit later in the hour, we'll be talking with Scott McCartney. He writes the middle seat column for the Wall Street Journal, talking about what it's like to fly these days. And 230 million people are going to be using domestic airlines. 1-888-477-9499. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe. That's what happens when you get a long weekend. You forget what your job is. Again, talking with Ron Nixon, Washington correspondent for The New York Times. He covers Homeland Security, and we've been talking about some of the problems at airports and the challenges facing the TSA, both from Congress and from the administration itself. Also, what it's like to be a security agent at some of these very busy airports. And again, you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Ron, an email from Jordan says, R.E. Prechick had issue with Global Entry. We decided to sign up about 2 weeks ago due to news about long lines this summer. Had to pay $100 in advance. No info on the site about the process at all. So far, my app is still pending. This seems to be another cog in the delay. Grr. That was from Joan. Have you covered or looked more deeply into some of the problems of signing up for PreCheck?
I have, actually, and I've gotten a number of emails and calls from people who have tried to sign up for the either pre-check or global entry. In global entry, you sign up through the Customs Border Protection, and then it includes pre-check. But what people are saying is that they sign up for it, but then they are given these their interviews come like weeks or even months later. Or, you know, for instance, a gentleman in Portland, Oregon, said he was given the option of going for his interview in Seattle, which is about 3 hours away. So, you know, it's a little problematic. I mean, and I just try to sign up. I have global entry, but I try to sign up just to see what the process was like for pre-check. And I did it. It showed there was one office near my office where you could go for an interview, and it said walk-ins on the website. I walked over there, and I walked in. They said, no, you have to sign up online. And I said, but there's no place to sign up online that says walk-ins. So you go back to your computer, and it just says walk-ins there. And so I didn't. And so I said, well, can I just sign up right here? There's like a sign-in sheet. So I can't. So it gets a little confusing for people. And I think that, you know, for a lot of people, they're probably, to be honest, aren't going to be able to get the pre-check in time to them to take advantage of it, at least maybe not for this travel season, because so many people now are trying to sign up for it. And it is, you know, putting a strain on the company that's trying to do it.
We have a lot of people that want to join us. Just a quick question. I know some of the airports have been using private screeners as opposed to, I guess, the TSA screeners. Has that been more effective? Has that eased some of the congestion at some of those airports? I think San Francisco is one of them.
Right. San Francisco, Kansas City is another one. I haven't heard anything that says that those airports are any better than this. And as a matter of fact, what I've heard is that they're experiencing the same. I haven't been to San Francisco in a while, so I don't know that myself. But from what I'm told, they're experiencing some of the same issues. And the thing that people have to remember about private screeners is that they're still under the authority of the TSA. So they still have to follow all the rules and procedures that TSA screeners have to follow. So it's not like you're getting a different workforce with different standards and different procedures.
And just to underscore that, on the one hand, it is to keep things moving, but also to provide a safe experience for airline travelers. I mean, almost contradictory things when you think about it.
Right. And this is one of the big issues is why you have those lines now. In addition to the shortage of staffers, when the Inspector General staff managed to get those fake bombs and fake weapons through, before that, TSA had this thing called managed inclusion. That is that if the lines were long and the pre-check line was short, they would take certain people and just run them through the expedited lines. Right. But when Admiral Neffinger got there, you know, he stopped that practice because this was one of those things that, and we don't know if that's how the folks got the fake bomb through, but he stopped that practice. And so if you stop that, that means that you don't take those people out of that line and run them through the pre-check line. And one of the big reasons behind that was that in Minneapolis, a woman who was on the, you know, domestic terrorist list managed to go through an expedited line. And so, you know, those things all led to them stopping managed inclusion, which, again, means that there are more people in the lines and there's no place for them to go.
Let me get Michelle from Malvern to join us. Hi, Michelle. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. Thank you. My question is, if I sign up for TSA PreCheck, can I do that with my daughter? And is it better to get TSA PreCheck or Global Entry with her? She's 7.
And she's 7 years old. Can you answer that, Ron?
Yes.
Probably PreCheck. And I don't know if she's 7 years old, if she has to sign up for it. Again, that's something I can't give you advice on that since she's so young. You did say 7, correct?
Yes, 7 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I don't know that. But for, you know, if you do a lot of domestic flights, then PreCheck is probably the best. Global entry is, you know, for people who travel internationally, you can come back and speed through customs fairly quickly, and it includes PreCheck with it.
So something to think about. Ron, we're going to have to say goodbye to you in a second or two or a minute
sure.
or two. So as you indicated earlier, it's going to be a busy season this summer for the flying public. Any advice for people besides get to the airport early, but advice for air travelers?
Well, I think that, you know, it's signing up for PreCheck or Global Entry or one of those things will help. I think that the summer will probably go a little bit smoother than what we've seen from Chicago and some of the other airports based on what TSA has done. But I would urge people to, you know, show up for the airport a little earlier. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to see those same types of lines that we saw before.
Well, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times. Thank you so much, Ron Nixon.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And he's Washington correspondent for The New York Times covering Homeland Security. And we've been talking about airlines and some of the congestion at some of our airports and questions about the TSA, joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Well, as I said, we've been talking about some of the problems with the TSA, including long lines at some of the country's busiest airports. So you make it through security. Let's talk now about your flight, how you bought your ticket, the additional fees that keep cropping up, and new features to help the flying public. And who better to be our guide? Scott McCartney writes the middle seat column for The Wall Street Journal, joining us once again on Radio Times. And Scott, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be back with you. Let me add one thing to the previous discussion.
Please do.
If for children 12 and under, if the parent has PreCheck status, the child is eligible for expedited screening. So only 13 and above, you'd need to apply for their own PreCheck number.
Well, let me ask you, but we spent the half an hour or so talking about some of the congestion at some of the airports and some of the problems that the TSA has. What is your solution as you see it?
Well, I think you know, this is clearly a manpower issue. If you're going to have the same screening regime that we have now, as Ron mentioned, a lot of changes came in after the really dismal screening results. Those results got leaked. There is a debate over the validity. I mean, obviously the results were terrible, but TSA was based on intelligence. So people about whom there are suspicions get much more rigid screening than undercover employees of the Department of Homeland Security, who presumably went through, not on the watch list. And with that, they know the procedures and things like that. It's really a question of whether those tests revealed valid threats or not. The screening procedures changed. They got a lot slower. At the same time, there are a lot more passengers. At the same time, there are fewer screeners. The change with what's called Managed Inclusion 2, which Ron mentioned, there's still a Managed Inclusion program. A lot of people still do get PreCheck on their boarding pass if they're not part of the program. But the random act of putting people into the lines ended. It's sort of come back with bomb sniffing dogs. So if the dog checks you, then they can put you through the PreCheck line, and that sped things up. Bottom line is there aren't enough screening lanes open at peak periods to handle the crowds that we have now. Now, they had a big surge this weekend, and they did pretty well. Whether that's sustainable over the rest of the summer, I don't think we know. But if you're going to get away from intelligence-based, risk-based screening and go to more one-size-fits-all, then you're going to need more people.
Let me get Shirley to join us. She has a question I had as well. And we'll put this to you, Scott McCartney. Shirley, go ahead, calling us from Bethel Township.
Hello. I think that this problem might be solved if everybody would have to put their luggage to the check-in, and then you wouldn't have people falling all over you trying to get their suitcases through the line. And then put more people on the baggage end so that when you came out, your baggage would be right there. I think that's more the solution to the problem.
Well, Shirley, I appreciate the call. And even adding to that, Scott, some people are saying get rid of the baggage fee to check your bag. I think it's $25 or $35. If you did that, then more people might check their bags and that might ease the lines. Is that a solution?
Well, I don't know that that's a long-term solution. The ability for business travelers to take a carry-on bag aboard is pretty darn important. And it's, yes, you would speed up the screening lines if you didn't allow anyone to bring a carry-on bag aboard. You would increase, speed up the lines if you only allowed one bag instead of two, or if you, frankly, enforce the size limits. The bags are a problem. There are four times as many carry-on bags as there are checked bags. And the carry-on bags, because of baggage fees, people are stuffing incredible amounts of stuff into carry-on bags. The density of those bags become a challenge for the X-ray machine. And so you get alarms and you get slowdowns. You get people, the bags get pulled out and people have to stand to the side and have their bag checked. And that does slow it down. In at the end of 2014, they also put in new software that actually detected more suspicious items. Well, that increases security, but it's also slowed down the lines. I don't think you can have a transportation system where you ban carry-on bags. If you waive the fees for the summer, that people would check more bags. That would be an adjustment that would create problems for airlines. Airlines would have to boost their own staffing, and that becomes a hiring issue. And TSA would have to shift resources to the carry-on bag screening. The checked bag screening. The checked bag screening can back up itself. We've seen this in Miami with international bags that miss the connecting flight because they have to be screened in Miami and the belts don't move fast enough. There are too many alarms. There aren't enough agents to resolve the alarms, so the bags never make it to the airplane.
Scott, let me ask you about the airline industry. As we know, airline travel is up pretty dramatically. We know that oil prices are down. There certainly has been some consolidation. Are airlines just rolling in dough these days?
Well, yes and no. They are for the airline industry. Compared to historical results of the airline industry, it's never been this good. Compared to the rest of the business world, airlines are still pretty low-margin business. We're not talking about Apple-like profits here. It's more along the lines of grocery stores. It's certainly a healthier industry. It clearly is more profitable, and it really gets to the question of, ultimately, I think whether air service in this country is a public utility that ought to be available to everyone at a regulated price, if you will. We got away from that in 1979 with really great success and expansion. And now we have an industry that is making lots of money, has historically lost lots of money, and I think there's sort of a shakeout coming of what kind of profit levels will we tolerate, mm-hmm. and if they get high enough, will there be new entrants that will come in and provide more pricing discipline,
more competition? I guess you're saying.
More competition, sure. I mean, this is what has happened regularly in the industry is when route by route or city by city or country by country, for that matter, when prices get high, an entrepreneur looks at it and says, hey, we can charge a lower price, we'll have lower costs, and we can make money undercutting that big old incumbent guy.
How do you suggest, and it seems there certainly are many ways and many sites to do some price checking or price comparison. What do you think is the best for the traveling public?
Well, I think the comparison sites like Kayak and some others provide a good service. They check lots of airlines. That saves time for consumers. I think it's worth looking at all of your options. The complexity to it is you really have to sort of take into account as you price shop all the fees that you're going to have to pay. So you may see a really cheap fare on Spirit Airlines, for example, but Spirit's going to charge you for reserving a seat. They're going to charge you for water on board the airplane. They're going to charge you more for your carry-on bag than they are for your checked bag because they want you to check the bag, not carry it on, the same kind of behavior we were talking about before. So if you're a family traveling and you see a really cheap price but you want to sit together and you're going to check bags and things like that, you may find that you spend even more on fees than you do on the fare on a carrier like Spirit.
And is that where airlines are making a lot of money off these various fees?
Yeah, well, baggage fees generate more than $2 billion a year. Reservation change fees, cancellation fees, which I think is the most punitive of the fees, that's about $2 billion a year. In the case of Spirit, about 30-35% of the company's revenue comes from fees rather than fares. So the fees are hugely important. That's why what the suggestion was made, hey, airlines ought to waive baggage fees for the summer. And the airlines fought back sternly because those fees are really important to their bottom line.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Scott McCartney. He writes the middle seat column for The Wall Street Journal. And summer is upon us, certainly after Memorial Day. We're talking about air travel, and it looks like something like 230 million people are expected to fly U.S. airlines this summer between, I believe it's June 1st and Labor Day. Give us a call. Any questions or comments? That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. And you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions or comments about air travel, this is the place to call or comment. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and if you're just joining us, Scott McCartney is our guest. He writes the middle seat column for the Wall Street Journal. We're talking about how to get the most out of your airline travel, certainly this summer. And again, calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Scott, you wrote about this, but I want to pick up on something you mentioned right before the break, make sure our listeners understand what you were saying, which is in order for families to fly together, let's say a mom or a dad or a mom and a dad and some kids, you might have to pay an extra fee in order for everyone to be pretty much in the same row?
Yeah, this is a really big issue. Airlines have been blocking lots of seats that are empty. When you buy your ticket and then you go to reserve seats, they don't show up or they show up with a fee. In most cases, they are extra legroom seats. In many cases, they're extra legroom seats. Some airlines, such as American, picking up on the U.S. Airways practice of labeling a lot of seats as preferred seats, even though they don't have extra amenities but require a fee. And they also hold back seats for elite-level frequent flyers, in some cases that don't show up at all. So you're looking for four seats together, and you go to the seat map, and maybe the only ones that are free to reserve that are left are middle seats, or maybe there aren't any at all. And so you're pressured into paying a fee to get seats together. It's a real problem for families. The alternative is to hope that the gate agent can work some magic and get you seats before boarding, or that you can get on the airplane and engineer trades with other passengers, who, by the way, probably don't want to sit next to your small child and be taking care of them during the flight anyway. And if you're the parent, you really don't want strangers sitting next to your small child either. So I think this has gotten some attention in Congress. There's actually a provision in the FAA reauthorization bill this year that's unanimously passed the Senate that says that airlines have to provide families with seating options together at whatever their lowest price. Some airlines, such as Frontier and others, charge a fee for any kind of seat reservation in advance. And so you buy your ticket, and you're not going to get a seat assignment until check-in on Frontier or Spirit or Allegiant or even some international airlines like British Airways.
Let me read a couple of comments, and then we've got some folks who want to join us. An email from Marge: on pre-check, we got an appointment immediately, had our approval within a week. We sailed through the line at the airport. So a positive experience with pre-check and the TSA. An email from Joe: Southwest Airlines does not charge a fee for checked bags, yet I believe the amount of carry-on bags is about the same as other airlines. I think the convenience is a bigger contributor than bag fees. An email from Warren: How does Frontier and other cheap airlines have so low prices if you don't take the extra fees? If you don't take the extras, it's way cheaper. I mean, I guess there are, even with fees, there are cheap airlines and more expensive airlines.
Yeah, I think that's right. On the Southwest carry-on bag, Southwest clearly carries more checked baggage than other airlines. They had a real adjustment when all this went in, where they had to hire more baggage handlers, invest in more baggage handling technology. And when you board Southwest flights, they're not the bins don't fill up. They're not gate checking bags at the last minute like so many airlines are. If you talk to the Phoenix airport director, for example, he says, I've got at the Southwest check-in counter, I've got a huge long line for people waiting to check bags and no line over at American. But then you get up to the TSA checkpoints and it's a long line at American and not as much of a line at TSA for Southwest because it moves faster. The question on Frontier and Spirit and the ultra low cost airlines, a lot of people love them because if you're aware of the fee structure and play it, you can get really good deals. You can fly somewhere truly for $59 if you're willing to sit in the middle seat and take the, whatever they give you at the last minute, and be very careful with what kind of bags you carry and all that. And it's a really good option for budget-minded people who want to fly somewhere. I've talked to grandmas who can go visit their grandkids in distant cities only because they can get lower prices on Spirit than they can get on other airlines.
Let me see what Elisa from Hatboro has to say. Elisa, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, Marty, I'm here.
Yes, go ahead, Elisa.
Yeah, my question is, when I go fly an airline and they take something from me or the passenger ahead of me and they dump it into a barrel, those barrels are full, and they don't empty them throughout the day. And if they really think that there's a bomb in there somewhere, they seem to be taking their lives into their own hands and the hands of passengers passing through.
Well, Elisa, I don't think they're taking bombs away from people, but there are these, small, or not so small, I guess, Scott, shampoos and liquids that seem to raise some questions.
Yeah, well, the only violation there is that the size of the container violated the 100 milliliter 3-ounce limit, and that's for a reason. So they know that what they're taking away from you is shampoo or water, or you have to empty out your water bottle, and you can take the empty water bottle through. It's not that they think that's a bomb,
right?
And here's the issue with liquid explosives. The FBI did a lot of testing and basically found that you can mix ingredients together and create a liquid explosive bomb. But you need to have exact quantities and specific quantities and really for doing harm to an airplane, large quantities. And so what they found was if you limit the quantities that people can carry on board to 3 ounces, You make it impossible to mix an explosive bomb in flight or in the airport terminal. You need very controlled, specific conditions to do that, and that was how they got to the comfort level that okay, we can keep liquid bombs off the airplane if we limit people to 3 ounces. And so, what piles up at the airport are liquids that are just larger than 3 ounces.
What about shoes? And I've noticed I went through airport security over this past weekend, and I didn't have to remove my shoes. Some people did, I noticed, in line. Is the TSA beginning to think differently about shoes?
Well, I think they've tried to get a little smarter. You don't have to remove your shoes in the pre-check lines. And with some, you know, thin sandals and things like that, I think they have come to realize that there's just not going to be a bomb inside that thin sole. It's not to say that shoes aren't still a threat. I mean, we certainly saw that with Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, and his basketball sneaker bomb. It is a reactive agency. So terrorists try and bring a bomb on board in shoes, and now we got to all take our shoes off. The underwear bomber is what sparked the body scanners, and you know the reality that if terrorists are going to hide bombs on their body, then we need to somehow look underneath the clothes.
Let's talk a bit about the safety record of airplanes. Of course, we know about the tragic accident that happened in the Mediterranean. I don't think we know exactly what happened there. But when you look overall, especially domestically, how would you rate the safety record?
Clearly improving. It has been a good year. Past couple of years have been very safe years in terms of accidents and incidents. Not so good in terms of terrorism. There have been multiple terrorist attacks on airplanes and things like that. But in terms of overall safety, technology has gotten better. Newer airplanes are clearly safer. Air traffic control has put through some safety measures. There has been a renewed focus after the Air France accident and I think also the Asiana accident in San Francisco, a renewed focus on pilot training and hand flying and awareness in the cockpit. I think all in all, aviation really has an exemplary safety record, and people should feel plenty safe getting on board airplanes.
Let me read a tweet from Lojo. Congress and airlines want deregulation but don't want to take ownership for security. Do you agree with that, Scott?
No, I think they have. I think airlines, which used to pay for security before 9/11, but, you know, there was a lot of criticism for doling it out to the lowest bidder. I think airlines realize they need good security. Attacks are extremely hurtful to the airline industry, and not to mention the potential loss of life. So I think there is a lot of focus. What I see is a lot of focus on security at airlines that people never see. Security teams at each airline monitoring very careful scrutiny of employees and things like that at most airlines. At the same time, I think TSA gets a lot of criticism for a lot of good reasons. But the interesting thing is, if you look at the overall safety record, and this is, it is a hard measure, but I think there is some significance to the fact that this country has not had an attack on its shores since in quite some time. And there have been plots that have been uncovered and foiled. I think the record at TSA is really pretty good.
Are you allowed to take your dog to work, Scott, or are you home joining us?
I'm working at home. Apologize.
No, that's fine. We always love hearing dogs. Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. We have Ken from Wilmington joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Ken. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I'm very impressed with your program. I listen to it all the time. My question is very simple. I fly Spirit. I fly Republic. I went and paid for a TSA pre-check. Yet Spirit doesn't accept it. Why is it that everyone talks about TSA and the long lines, yet Spirit Airlines does not accept TSA pre-check?
Do you know the answer to that, Scott?
Yeah, it's so what happens with PreCheck is the airline computers have to tie into TSA. When you have PreCheck, when you make a reservation and you have your known traveler number in the reservation, the airline actually sends that information to TSA, and they run a check to make sure you're okay. Spirit does not have the ability with its computer system to link up with TSA, and some other airlines don't as well. And so for that reason, you don't get TSA. It really is a question of priority and investment for the airline. Airlines have to pay for this, and most have, but some, you know, primarily the ultra low cost carriers have chosen not to.
Ken, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I'm curious about the infrequent flyers. I mean, the people that maybe fly a couple of times a year. Scott, are they just out of luck when it comes to getting the kinds of seats that they want or any of the perks that come with flying?
Well, they're certainly at a disadvantage. You know, I think there are some perks that are worth paying for and that they can take advantage of. If you fly Southwest, you can pay a small fee and get the early bird check-in, so you get a prime seat. I think on some airlines, on some flights, paying for extra legroom is a really good thing, especially if you're 6 feet tall or taller. Right. With that comes extra perks. If you're so inclined, you can get an airline credit card at a lot of carriers, and that'll get you Group One boarding, for example, and a few perks like that. Sometimes a free check bag. So there are ways to work the system. Having elite status really is the differentiator between good experience and bad experience. And it's hard to get unless you do travel a lot. But for some people, there are, you know, unless you're absolutely chasing the lowest fares, there are even now, because airlines are more interested in selling first-class seats than they are in giving them away for free to their frequent flyers, there are some pretty reasonable discount first-class fares out there that you can buy in advance. And so if you're, you know, retiree with some disposable income and you don't want the hassle and you really like to fly first class, you ought to look for first class fares, because if it's $100 to $200 more, it may be worth it to you.
Scott, we're almost out of time here. I'm curious about, do other countries do airline travel better than the U.S., or do they all have some version of what we do here?
It's an interesting question. Security has pretty well standardized around the world, although some countries obviously have better equipment. And, it's interesting. TSA's and Delta have been making a lot of noise about innovation lanes that just opened in Atlanta. It's the same security lanes that you find in Europe and Canada that they've had for several years. So I think in some ways we're behind. But around the world, in Europe, Asia, Latin America, you see generally the same mix, same kind of mix of legacy airlines providing global service, low-cost airlines providing regional and sometimes longer service. We're now seeing European discount airlines fly more to the U.S., providing more competition there. So I think a lot of the same trends get copied around the world, and airline service, one way or another, it really is pretty similar.
Well, Scott, as always, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Sure. Great to be with you, Marty.
Nice to have you with us as well. Scott McCartney writes the Middle Seat column for The Wall Street Journal. And we began the hour with Ron Nixon, Washington correspondent for The New York Times. And he's been covering some of the problems that the TSA has been experiencing. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. But stay with us. We'll be right back.